The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Tensions between neighbors are at a new modern high as President Trump imposes 50% tariffs on a variety of Canadian imports. The talks collapsing late Friday, the Canadians walking out of negotiations with the U.S.
We cannot accept what they've offered, and we will not give what they've asked.
The new U.S. tariffs will touch on just 5% of the Canadian goods that come south, but the list of affected products ranges from Canadian beer and whiskey to hockey sticks, furniture, textiles, and building supplies like cement. American importers will now have to pay a 50% levy to bring those items across the border.
Canada will match Washington's new tariffs dollar for dollar in order to protect Canadian workers, farmers, families, and businesses.
On Monday, the Prime Minister said there are ways to improve trade between his country and the U.S.
But an attitude at the negotiation table that Canada is a subsidiary of the United States, the Canadian industry is going to be disadvantaged relative to American industry, that we're going to set up terms so that over time, Canadian industry is going to face constant headwinds. That's not something we're going to accept.
But for Canada, I think that one of the things that's important about all of this that has happened is a bit of a wake-up call. It's really easy to be dependent on the United States. Geographically, they're next door. That's not going to change. You know, language, culture. You know, we've talked about the importance of diversifying to other markets for a long time. This is a wake-up call to make sure that we do everything we can to do that. Not to move away from the United States, but to add, you want to talk leverage, to add leverage of actually being a little bit less dependent.
What are your options? You know, tonight I spoke with some people in earlier programs about the European Union, for example, trying to maybe take up some of the slack that's being created now with the United States possibly falling out of a trade deal.
But we recognized from the start that America has changed. Early last year in this room, I observed that the decades-long process of steadily increasing integration between our economies was over. Our government understood before many that America would transform all of its commercial relationships, that it would put a series of tariffs on its closest allies and use economic integration as a weapon. We recognize that sometimes its signature was written in pencil.
Carney says this fall, Canada will begin talks with the European Union for what he calls a much stronger and deeper security and economic partnership.
Global conflicts are expanding and evolving. They're more than kinetic, as horrible as that is. They're economic, they're social, they're technological. Canada, Ireland, and Europe are increasingly and more immediately vulnerable to once distant threats. And I suggest that amidst this change, amidst this disruption, Canada, Ireland, and Europe can be pivotal, powerful, and purposeful, a force for good.
It's my strong personal view that as the international order will be rebuilt, but it will be rebuilt out of Europe.
This growing divide, he's been in power, what, a year and a half? And you see this growing divide between two brothers, two brother nations, Ephraim and Manasseh, or America and Canada. And the significance of this, really, you only get it at the Trumpet magazine. You only get it at our website, thetrumpet.com. The fact that he's doing Europe's bidding. He wants to be closer to Europe. Europe's going to establish the new world order. What's happening? What Canada's doing right now is what Europe, once they get everything in order, it's what Europe is going to do to the United States. And we've been talking about trade wars for so long because the Bible talks about this. So it is, he's getting his coaching from the dear leader, Barack Obama. His thinking aligns pretty closely with Carl zu Guttenberg. And we'll give you some quotes on that here in just a second. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. And so, more tough talk. President Trump's threatening to name the Lake of Ontario the Lake of America. Just like he changed the Gulf name, the Gulf of America. And, you know, Carney has a lot of support because a lot of Canadians are offended when Donald Trump suggests things like Canada, you know, being a subsidiary of the United States or a state within America. And, you know, Canadians don't like that. So Carney's speaking boldly. And Donald Trump, for his part, he has been tough on Canada. That's for sure. But here you see this brotherhood alliance, and it's unraveling. And that, too, is prophesied. It's not just a little foretaste of what Europe's going to soon do. But you see this alliance severing. Politico says U.S. President Donald Trump on Sunday accused Canada of wanting the benefits of being a U.S. state without being one. So this is not going to go over well. These kinds of statements. In his first remarks since trade talks between Ottawa and Washington failed, they have also charged our great farmers, this is quoting Trump, for many years, massive amounts of tariffs. No more, he wrote on social media. No more. Canada will match Washington's new tariff dollar for dollar in order to protect Canadian workers. You heard that there from Mark Carney. In the coming days, we will release details of these new tariff measures, which will come into force the Tuesday after Labor Day. And here again, of the many angles to this story, you do see, in some cases, you see President Trump taking a tougher stance with allies, or in this case, brothers, than he does with terrorist nations. He gets so excited when he says, yeah, we sat down with Hamas. We've talked with the mullahs. The dialogue is as good as ever. And then don't get him started on Canada. This is from Unheard. It says, Mark Carney can win by walking away from a U.S. trade deal. It says, the collapse of U.S.-Canadian trade talks was meant to demonstrate Washington's leverage and ability to dominate smaller neighbors. Instead, it's given Ottawa something rarer than tariff relief, political clarity. He's speaking for the radical left. He's speaking like Obama. Now, there's also a lot of Trump derangement syndrome that factors into this. And there's also China factors into this. Canada doesn't want to be a part of anything that would distance itself from China, because so many elites in Canada, just like in America, they've sold out to the Chinese, to the CCP. It says here the U.S. has placed 50% tariffs on roughly $20 billion worth of Canadian goods. An important angle to this, again, is that here's Carney. Here's America's closest neighbor, right across the border to our north. And they're reaching out to the Holy Roman Empire. That's the prophetic significance above all. Reaching out to the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. He's a reflection of the hostility that exists in the heart of Europe. Jeroboam, God brought him back to save America from being blotted out, from even having its name blotted out. And that certainly has happened. And now you've got all these things being changed to America, as far as naming goes. God brought him back to save America, but not to save the world. It's not bringing the world together. Leaders, foreign leaders, do not love President Trump. Carl Theodore zu Guttenberg, he's quoted in our Trumpet article from July of 2025. This was soon after Carney came to power. And we wrote, closer economic cooperation with Europe began in 2014 when Prime Minister Stephen Harper signed a free trade deal with the European Union. It says, when this event occurred, Zu Gutenberg wrote at Project Syndicate, two often underestimated transatlantic actors, the European Union and Canada, have embarked on an important and timely initiative. He loves it, Gutenberg. And he loves it even more now because he can stick it to Donald Trump, Orange Hitler. Canada can, and soon the Holy Roman Empire will. It says the return of Donald Trump moved Gutenberg to state in a January 8th speech in Austria, this is quoting Gutenberg, as a European group, as NATO, together with the Canadians, we can position ourselves much more strongly against the bully Trump. See, Trump's the problem. Trump, if Trump wants even tariffs or fair trade, he's the problem. Because for so long, so many nations have benefited from sticking it to the United States. And I'm not going to get into all the detail of what tariff is justified and which one isn't. But this is, Donald Trump campaigned on this. And as Gutenberg says, we have got to counter the bully. That's what the strong man that comes out of Europe, the prophesied Daniel 8 man, he's described in Daniel 11 as well. The stage is being set. Mark Carney needs a trade war with the United States in order to justify this alliance with Europe, to reach out to the Holy Roman Empire. He needs it to get Trump. Anything and everything to go after Orange Hitler. It says Canada may be a key military ally of Europe to counter Trump. These statements are important to note because Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury has pointed to Gutenberg as possibly playing a central role in the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. these are subjects, as I say, that you're only going to get from thetrumpet.com. There was evidently a framework for an agreement in place, but as I say, they've got to have close relations with China as well. And the United States, led by Trump, would like to see more separation there. They see China as a competitor. And China, for its part, the whole world is going to gather together in an alliance against America, the mart of nations, trade war. Trade war leads to hot war. This is from Conservative Treehouse. In short, as Canadian conservatives suspected, Mark Carney lied about everything. And this is what he does. And I'm sure he learns this well from the dear leader. He'll just lie about it. Anything to stick it to America. Barack Obama got away with treason all these years. 8 years in office during the fake presidency years. All during the years to get Trump. He's never been held to account. He's never been punished. They get away with lies. They lie about everything. Doesn't faze them. The more bold and audacious they are, the better. U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer appeared on CNBC to discuss the trade agreement between the U.S. and Canada and what caused the final breakdown at the last minute. Greer notes, the Canadian team appeared to be negotiating at the end from the position of politics, as the Canadian team were aligning themselves with a domestic effort. It all gets down to politics. Greer draws attention to the friction points being very small. The U.S. tariffs were on less than 5% of overall Canadian exports and less than 0.06 of U.S. imports. The U.S. made several offers to present Canada with the best trade terms in the world, However, Canada wanted more. Canada wanted to retain all their market barriers, retain all quotas, retain all tariffs and restrictions against U.S. goods and services, but remove all the tariffs against them. So, Carney, well, you heard him in the cold open. Oh, we're not going to accept those terms. How could he be so bold? Well, he's got support from other powerful nations. So, like I say, what we're seeing is like a preview. And we were on this the moment he came into power, Mark Carney. And conservative treehouse is just getting around to the significance here. As sharp as his analysis generally is, Sundance. Still, we were right. You heard it at the trumpet first. Every time he has an opportunity, Mark Carney reminds the world he views Canada as part of Europe. That's the way he sees his nation. This should be a wake-up call to Canadians, really. Some of that toughness coming from the Trump administration, it's needed. It says, as trade conflict between the U.S. and Canada deepens, Mark Carney looks toward Europe for a financial and security lifeline. It says, during remarks earlier today, Commonwealth Prime Minister Carney noted his intention to join with Europe this fall for increased economic and national security. This is in alignment. The former Bank of England head has been operating since his installation. We had an article. This was in the AI issue of the Trumpet magazine. All in on artificial intelligence. There's an article in there. The real agenda in Mark Carney's pivot to Europe. It quotes Abraham Blondeau, or he quotes from Carney later. But Mr. Blondeau says, this trend of Canada looking to Germany was foretold in the Bible. Hosea 5 in verse 13 prophesies that Ephraim, the biblical name for the British and Commonwealth nations, will fall into crisis and turn to Germany for help. It says, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, they go to the Assyrians. When Ephraim sees its sickness, its disease, we've been talking about the Isaiah 1 sickness for quite a few programs in recent weeks. They know there's sickness deep within, and they're going to look to Assyria to bail them out. Mark Carney is beginning to fulfill this prophecy as far as Canada is concerned. Canada has severe economic and societal sickness. Carney sees Canada's economic dependency on the U.S. as a sickness. Quotes Carney, saying essentially that. Says it's hard to know how successful Carney will be in his agenda, but his betrayal will be paid back in full. Hosea 5 and verse 5 prophesies that the U.S., the British peoples, and Israel will fall together at the hands of the German-led European superpower, the beast power, the Holy Roman Empire. He says, Mr. Fleury, speaking of my father, issued this strong warning in 2004 that we must heed today. Superpowers have been destroyed in history for refusing to face the hard truths. America and Britain are going to pay a heavy price for deceiving themselves about Germany. It was 2004, over 20 years ago. We were right. He was right. You can go back further. And our brochure that goes by that name, it just takes you right step by step through the many prophecies of Herbert W. Armstrong. Spot on. 100 years, God has given our nations, the Israelite nations, America, Canada, Britain, Australia, New Zealand, little Judah in the Middle East. He's given us 100 years of righteous leadership, of truth, of godly knowledge. Talked about that yesterday. That verse in Hosea 4 that says we're destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because we don't understand the prophecies of God. We won't look to the God of the Bible. The Bible doesn't have any authority over our lives. I was talking this morning in class just about the significance of these writings, the Holy Scriptures, number one, but then when you look at what Herbert Armstrong said about Mystery of the Ages and what my father said about the autobiography of Herbert Armstrong, and as I was saying to the students, you have the opportunity to go through these important works through this school year and become familiar with and actually develop a relationship with servants of God like Herbert Armstrong. These are your companions. They heard a forum this morning about how friends influence you. Winston Churchill would talk about his companions, his books, his friends, and how we need to be well acquainted with them and get to know them. Look at how much of God's knowledge has just been rejected or ignored or forgotten. I guess I don't want to get too far off the main point here, but when you look at the Laodicean Rebellion, as I've noted before, that church, the Worldwide Church of God, under the direction of Herbert Armstrong, it did quite a work for God over the course of 50-plus years. And then when those lawless ministers took over after Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, they came in, they started changing all the doctrines. And then they were lying, saying, we're not changing anything. And then they were intimidating people. Well, you're going to go along with it, no matter what. That church went woke. It turned into a radical extremist organization before our nations went woke, before you even saw so much of the communist infiltration. Satan really knows how to, he knows how to destroy. God is a creator, a sustainer. He beautifies, he maintains, and Satan destroys. Satan blots out, and he's good at it. That's why, as I say, with respect to the sickness, we've got to confront our sins and look at our sins and turn from our wicked ways. Or we're just going to go along blindly. Oh, Mark Carney says do this. This is what we're doing. Or President Trump says do this. And meanwhile, there's a sickness. And like Hosea 5 says, it gets so bad for Ephraim that they go to Assyria. And it gets so bad for Manasseh that we just disappear from the prophecies. At least the ones like Hosea 5:13, Daniel 11:40, we're still there in other prophecies for sure. Civil war, sickness, immorality, upside down family, that's all there for sure, just as the Bible describes. And we're not repenting. The sickness is on display every day here recently, here in the States. You've got this story about, what's her name? Clancy. She killed her children. And then she goes to court and she claims it's postpartum depression, which is not unusual. Mothers have claimed that before or used that as their defense. But what's so shocking and sick is to see women turning out in droves to show their support for this woman who killed her children. She murdered her children. What does it take? Forget about this woman's deranged thinking. What kind of thinking in other ladies or women where they would just turn up and cheer this woman on? It's a shocking story. It's embarrassing. It should be. Should be embarrassing. The Federalist says Clancy, 36, is currently on trial facing murder charges for allegedly strangling her three young kids while the father was making a grocery run. Her defense team doesn't deny that she killed the kids, only that she's not at fault and that Clancy is actually the victim of postpartum psychosis and negligent medical providers who had her hopped up on dangerous a dangerous cocktail of antidepressants. Well, those aren't good influences either. But look at these people out on the streets showing their support for this woman who did this dirty deed, strangled her children, three of them. Clip 10.
You know, one of my sister-in-laws, it could be one of my best friends, and it could be me. So just here to support.
We are hearing her. We see that she tried everything. And I really do believe that she went into a state of psychosis.
We feel like the system failed her. She was begging for help, but no one was there. I don't know if us being here will make her feel any better, but I mean, she's living in hell right now.
It's bad enough that most of these people probably are very much pro-abortion. You know, just abort the baby. Get it out. Put it to death. Well, here's a case where the babies were born. They were alive. They were roaming the house, the backyard. And the mom strangled them to death. And here, you see the crowd. It's a pretty big crowd. This is not a sign of a healthy society. There is an angle to this that I'm sure involves drugs and antidepressants and all of that. Yet another sickness in our world today, in our nations today. It says here, as the trial has progressed, scores of women, mostly white, are flooding TikTok and other social media to morbidly declare their support and solidarity with Clancy. You heard the ladies in the crowd there saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. For what? She murdered her children. Even her lawyers don't deny this. And so we've got to get behind the cause of what? I don't even know. It doesn't make sense. In another way, it's perfect, isn't it? It's true that Clancy's husband may have been negligent in failing to ensure his wife got the care she needed and in keeping his children away from her, given her professed intention to potentially harm them. It's also true that Clancy's medical providers may have committed malpractice. None of that excuses a woman, one by one, choking off oxygen from the lungs of her young children until each lay lifeless on a cold basement floor. That Clancy attempted to kill herself and hysterically sobs in court doesn't bring back the lives she took. Whether she committed the killings under a state of emotional duress or not. So let's turn out in droves to show support for a murderer. Unbelievable. The American Spectator. This says, 1 year ago, this past weekend, a 14-time repeat criminal murdered 20-year-old Irina Zarutska in Charlotte, North Carolina. Remember that story? She was just sitting on a train, I think it was, minding her own business, and gets stabbed to death. In that case, the women didn't turn out in droves. No, no, certainly not. She was just murdered. Happens all the time, I guess. The murder sparked a wave of outrage across the U.S., but was short-lived. 1 year on, we have a scattering of beautiful murals and little else to remind us of her death. The point being, here there's going to be more support, in this case for a murderer, than there is for an actual victim of a heinous crime. And more we're seeing this kind of thing. Luigi, remember that story? People that win praise from just the general public because they killed somebody. They murdered somebody. This is some kind of sickness. And that's what it boils down to for so many. If it fits within your political worldview, then in some cases, murder's fine. It's all about politics. In the case of Clancy, it's not even about life or protecting life or punishing murderers. It's about promoting your agenda, your political agenda. So much sickness, so much sickness and disease. That's the bigger picture that we should be looking at with respect to so many of these stories. When we come back, we'll shift gears a little bit. The big news here in the States over the last 24 hours was the Supreme Court ruling, handing President Trump a big win, and then just seeing all of the talking heads explode. So predictable, obviously. We'll go through some of that when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
We begin this hour with big breaking news out of the United States Supreme Court, which has just granted Donald Trump a win in his fight to take control over our elections.
Somebody just asked me at our network, is this the sort of thing that I should be really concerned with, or is this not that big of a deal? And I would submit to you and them, this is a really big deal.
And it's a big deal because the Supreme Court, I think, is giving way too much running room to an administration that has signaled over and over again that it doesn't believe that elections should be in the hands of the voters and disagrees fundamentally with the founders' design that elections should be kept far from the person sitting in the Oval Office and should be run by the states and localities. And President Trump continues to try to seize that power for himself and the executive.
It seems as if the courts given him wider purview, a kind of wider range to engage in messing with the voter process, to messing with the elections. That, you know, it's never just simply about Trump. It's about the circle of enablers around him, that they've opened up the gates for them to engage in some shenanigans.
Less than 2 weeks away from some states sending out their mail-in ballots, the Supreme Court clearing the way for the Trump administration to move forward with its effort to overhaul mail-in voting. The order could prevent the Postal Service from delivering ballots to states that don't comply with President Trump's executive order. So a big decision or ruling coming down today from the Supreme Court, as you see, saying the Supreme Court grants President Trump's request for permission to implement his executive order overhauling the mail-in ballot system. The liberal justices dissent, but the court did not rule on whether the order is legal, leaving the door open to more challenges that could slow the plot process even still.
I mean, why is he fighting so hard for the SAVE Act when there are so very few non-citizens that are voting at all? It's actually sort of an imaginary problem, and so many Americans have real problems right now making rent, buying groceries.
That we don't know what the implementation will look like. The Postal Service actually has a statute more than 100 plus years old that says it can't be a party to fraudulent activity. You can't send counterfeit, you can't send drugs, you can't engage in cheating your neighbor by using the mail system. There is a robust anti-fraud position, and it is possible.
You've got to prove that there's fraud.
It is.
I mean, that's the problem, is that you have to prove that there is fraud.
That they limit what this new rule does so that it focuses on fraud prevention.
Listen, that, to your
fraud?
Point.
I want to know what fraud.
That is already in the book, so I don't understand what the executive order
would be about. No fraud. This isn't a win.
You have to prove that there's fraud. Well, there were some senators that were trying to do that, as I recall, on January 6th, 2021. And what did these people do? They blotted it out. They stirred up a fake insurrection so that you didn't even look at the evidence. You didn't even examine all the affidavits. You didn't even consider what witnesses were prepared to say. To hear them now self-righteously talking about, hey, there's a law that says you can't cheat, so everything's good. Oh, really? So if there's a law or a statute, is that a guarantee that we're going to comply and obey? Of course not. That's why we're living in such a lawless society, top to bottom. And we're not confronting our sins. We're celebrating murderers. Look at the just the level of chaos and confusion and unhappiness and drug-addicted misery, murder, violence, homelessness. You could go right down the list. All of our societal ills, they're there. And here's President Trump. How dare he promote the SAVE Act? Listen to what... this is from MS Now, or Morning Meltdown, clip 6.
There are so many layers to the story. First of all, we should remind everyone how vanishingly rare fraud in mail-in voting is.
Vanishingly rare? It just never happens. Mail-in voting with fraud. It happens all over the world. That's why most nations don't do it. Only the United States does. Actually, only the Dear Leader-led party of the United States does. This is what they want. This is what they have in California. And this is what they got in 2020. And that's how they win. They cheat. They cheat even when there's laws or statutes on the book that say, don't cheat. You can't cheat. You're a federal agency. And so you're law-abiding. You're there just to carry out, you're there to execute the laws, to live it, to live by example. The Supreme Court handed the Trump administration a major win on Monday afternoon, staying a lower court injunction that had blocked key provisions of President Trump's election integrity executive order. So the radical leftists, being, you know, as litigious as they are, they rushed to court over the order, and the Supreme Court didn't even back the executive order. It just basically said that, well, you can't show there's any harm yet. So come back and tell us where the harm was caused, who was hurt by it. And then we'll look at it more closely. And so as it is, you have this battle between states. Some states that want to abide by the rules, uphold the rules, the standards, the laws, and others that just want mass mail-in ballots circulating all over the place. And listen, there's a statute on the book that says the U.S. Postal Service could never be party to corruption or cheating or lying or stealing. So what are you worried about? What are you worried about? President Trump's executive order contained three key provisions. Listen up if you want to see how extreme this is. The Department of Homeland Security is directed, where feasible and lawful, to compile and provide states with citizenship lists for voting age residents. They're just going to give the states lists. Here are the citizens. Just so that you know, if someone's voting that claims to be a citizen but is not, the Department of Justice is directed to prioritize investigation and prosecution of violations of existing federal laws. Okay, so we're going to prosecute people that break the law. That's not exactly a news flash. That's what the Department of Justice is there to do, right? The U.S. Postal Service is directed to undertake rulemaking involving new tracking, barcoding, and voter list procedures for mail ballots. And that's the one that really gets under their skin. They got to have it. They got to have those mail ballots. This isn't a ruling, it says at Red State, that Trump's election integrity policies are lawful. It's a ruling that states can't block them based on harms that haven't happened yet. This isn't the final word, said the Supremes, but it's a significant one as November looms. And so that's why the heads are exploding. Here's more from Morning Meltdown, clip 7.
The dissenters, the liberals, are saying, you got to be kidding me. The midterms are around the corner. Are you saying that we have to wait until the Trump administration improperly interferes in an election that's supposed to be governed by the states before you will act? And yet that's what the Supreme Court has done here. And it's not the first time they've done this in other cases involving the Trump administration. They've left a sense of unease here, along with all the other ways that we are concerned that the Trump administration is going to try to interfere in the elections with this midterm.
One thing about these people, they love talking about cheating in elections as long as it's Republicans or Trump. That's even better. Trump is interfering with elections. Vladimir Putin interfered with the election in 2016. They made that up. Barack Obama, John Brennan, James Comey, they made it up. They poof out of thin air. Vladimir Putin rigged the election for Trump. And now Trump is rigging the election for Trump. The last one, it was too big to rig, as President Trump has noted. So they kind of went silent over that. Once the fraud that was Joe Biden, once that was revealed, once it was so obvious that it was impossible to cover up like they'd been doing for 3.5 years, well, you know how it played out. Kamala's pushed forward. Everybody knows that's a disaster. They know they're cooked. So that was the summer they tried to kill him. Twice. They tried to assassinate President Trump because they knew they were about to lose in a landslide. And now here Trump's back and we're on to cheating again. Trump's the cheater. They go by the books. If the law's on the book, just so that you know, the Democrats, they abide by those laws. Look at this world. I'll never forget that exchange between Bill Barr, back when he spoke with some common sense with respect to elections and election law. He said, everywhere in this world where there's been mass mail-in ballots, there has been cheating on a massive scale. Everywhere. We're not immune from that. In fact, it's going by the last few elections, it's probably worse in the United States than in some third world nation. I don't think we played clip 8 yet, but play that one.
There's been this fear hovering over this election for a year or more that the Trump administration was going to find a way to put its thumb on the scale, whether that was the ICE agents in the streets, the National Guard trying to crack down on voter rolls. You know, of course, we'll see if they even accept the results, if they don't like them come November. But here it appears, at least temporarily, they're getting yet another assist from the courts.
They're not going to accept the results. They're going to cheat. There's this fear. 2020 was perfect. There were no fear. They told us ahead of time, remember? Axios? Just be ready. Election night, there's going to be a, it seems like a red wave. But they're going to, this year, they're going to have to continue counting for 5 days. Election day was Tuesday. And the final count was announced Saturday evening. And approximately 17 cars honked their horns. We were living in the land of make-believe. You talk about fraud and cheating and lying and stealing. It's hard to imagine any other. I'm sure it'll get worse because the Apostle Paul said that it would. It's hard to imagine the blatant scheming and lying and cheating and just pure evil. It's hard to imagine exceeding that which we saw in 2020. But give them an inch. I mean, they'll take it. They'll take a mile. They'll do anything necessary for politics. That's what it all boils down to. If it fits your political narrative, look, even murder is justified. There were people that said that they wished he hadn't tilted his head in Butler, that the assassin would have been a better shot. They were talking about assassinating him for years. All the celebrities and the videos and so, holding up decapitated heads. The stabbing of Caesar in Central Park, right there in the heart of New York. Donald Trump had a lot to do with the skyline in New York. He's a builder of pretty big and beautiful things. And he's given a lot to U.S. cities, to New York in particular. But look at the hatred. Look at the derangement. Still there. One final clip from the meltdown, clip 9.
We all lived through the 2020 election and the aftermath. John, like that's the reason for the concern. We know what Trump is capable of, and we know the degree to which we as a country relied on the courts in the aftermath of 2020 to effectively cast aside Trump's challenges one after the other and affirm Joe Biden's election and swearing in as president. So once again, we're at the mercy of the courts. That's why this matters so much, because, yes, I think there is this assumption for good reason, given his past action, that Trump is not going to sit by and lose control of one or both chambers of Congress without a protracted fight that invariably will get into the courts. And here we will be again, much as we were 6 years ago, hoping and waiting for the court to do the right thing.
Who knows what's going to happen in November? But this country is still deeply divided. And you see it. You see it in the influence that the dear leader has on Mark Carney. You look at the divisions in the world. We know it's here in the state. It's the same in Canada. It's the same all throughout Israel. I mean, there's divisions even in Europe. We know it's a mixture of iron and clay, prophetically. But a strong man can bring it together. For a short time, for just a tiny period of time or space. And that's what your Bible says will happen. These people, these talking heads, now they're sounding the alarm. Now it's Trump who's cheating. Now it's Trump who's rigging elections. These are the people who covered up the actual stealing. These are the ones that created a fake insurrection and sent people to jail for taking a stroll through the Capitol. These are the ones that tell us that the Jews are the problem in the Middle East. And that Gaza, it's genocide in Gaza. I think I touched on this story yesterday. I don't have much time left. But it says from the Free Press, July 22nd, UNICEF, a UNICEF-led team measuring hunger in Gaza uploaded a presentation containing its most comprehensive analysis since war broke out nearly 3 years ago, this is since October 7, the report titled Gaza Nutrition Smart Survey Result revealed a stark reversal from the declarations made almost exactly a year ago that a dire famine was ravaging the war-torn territory. This is what the talking heads reported. Well, UNICEF says so, and we're here to tell you that the Gazans are suffering and the Jews are bad. That's our narrative. That's our worldview. That's what we learned at Columbia. Wasting, the report said, using a term for extreme thinness, is low across all domains, suggesting no widespread acute malnutrition at population level. At the rate of 0.5%, Gaza has one of the lowest rates of acute child malnutrition in the region. What? Yeah, that's right. Thankfully, the morning meltdown is going to come around and say, you know what we said about a year ago? Genocide, starvation, malnutrition. You know what we said about, you know, the Jews and Israel, what Israel was doing? We got that wrong. And there's a new report that's out. And we just wanted to make sure that we got you the truth. That we delivered some true knowledge. It says here, the researchers also concluded that about 12% of children in Gaza had stunting or impaired growth and development that is the result of poor nutrition. That is less than half of the region's 26% stunting rate. So they're actually leading the way in health, in nutrition, at least for the regions, the region it's in. It says a researcher who has overseen teams collecting malnutrition data in the Horn of Africa remarked that she had never seen the emergence of obesity and excess weight in a place that was declared only a year earlier to be suffering from famine. They've actually got pretty high rates of obesity in Gaza as well. So they're able to get food. They're consuming something. Maybe not the healthiest, but still, they're not starving. Listen to this from Talk TV. This is clip 12.
So you'll remember that there was an awful lot of reporting in the UK media, in fact, around the world, that Israel was intentionally starving children in the Gaza Strip, that the failure of aid to make it into the Strip during the war was creating a malnutrition problem, all sorts of things like that. But the UN's own latest Gaza Nutrition Survey has actually blown all that apart, that whole famine narrative. Acute malnutrition among under fives was just 0.2 to 0.8%, according to that UN report. And their own conclusion is that there is no widespread acute malnutrition at population level, according to their nutrition cluster presentation.
Hold on, what's happened to the UN? They're normally on Hamas's side. What's happened? Have they had a spiritual awakening? What's going on with the UN there?
Well, rest assured, it's all right because nobody's reported on it except perhaps for this channel. I mean, I've searched specifically for coverage of that 22nd of July report, that Gaza Smart Nutrition Survey, including that 0.2 to 0.8% finding across the BBC, across the Guardian, across the Times, the Telegraph, the Independent. I haven't found it yet. Maybe I've missed it, but it's funny because they all went, you know, massive on this supposed deliberate intention of Israel to try and starve children.
It's almost comical, isn't it? The one guy asks, what happened to the UN? They're usually the most anti-Israel, the most rabidly hateful toward Jews. And then it comes out with a bit of truth, and the guy's like, yeah, but don't worry, nobody's going to report this. It doesn't fit their political worldview, so just ignore it. The Free Press says here, a year ago, the picture could hardly have looked more different. On August 22, 2025, the IPC declared a famine in one section of Gaza. More than 500,000 Palestinians were facing catastrophic conditions characterized by starvation, destitution, and death. They're dying. They're starving to death. The article finishes with this. How did Gaza go from being officially classified as famine-stricken to having, in less than a year, one of the region's lowest levels of severe child malnutrition? How did this happen? Well, you know the truth. Because your eyes are open to the truth. because you're listening to shows like this that give you the truth. There's so much truth, so much knowledge, though, that we've forsaken. My people, as God says, are destroyed because of this lack of knowledge. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.